We are holding on page 30 in Yoma or Islamic Bays. We learned yesterday about among the people who donated big things to the Beis Hamikdash. One of them was Nicanor and his doors. So now the Gemara is going to tell us the story. Tanan Rabbanan, man what nisim happened with the doors, which we said because of that, the Mishnah had said Nicanor nasim nisim l'dasoisav. So what was the nes? Omru, so they said the story is like this. When he went to bring doors for the Beis Mikdash from Alexandria in Egypt. Now, Alexandria in those days was the world center of page 30 in Yoma.
Where?
At the top, oh, Islamic base. Then you're looking in a different Masechta. Page 30 in Yoma, oh, Islamic base. So Alexandria in those days was the world center of technology and science and everything else. We're going to have later on in the Gemara that the Chachamim also at various times called for experts from there. So he knew if he's going to get the best quality doors for the Beis Hamikdash, they were going to have to be made in Alexandria. So he goes over there. The Ritva, by the way, points out. Now, the fact is, the Torah tells us that you're not allowed to return to Mitzrayim. Nevertheless, though, here, he was going there for trade, and that's one of the cases in which you're mutter. You're allowed to go there. The Sifri says you can go there to trade or to conquer it. The Ritva, by the way, mentions you have to wonder. I mean, you have many great Gedolei Yisrael throughout the generations who lived in Egypt. We have the Rambam, we have the Radvaz, we have there's many, and up until modern times, there was a solid Jewish community in Egypt. So there's a number of different explanations. The Ritva brings a few, and then other Rishonim bring others. He mentions that one thing is that the original cities and the original people of Mitzrayim have long since been mixed up with others, or actually he says the cities themselves are not necessarily the same original cities that existed in the times of Tanakh, and therefore you'd be allowed to live there. Then he gives a different answer. It's only also to go by the route from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt. And here are these various Gedolei Yisrael that went there came in different ways. In fact, I've even seen an explanation of a variation on that one that somebody explains that is why. Why does the Torah tell us at the beginning of Parashas Maaseh, the whole itinerary that the Jewish people went during all the 40 years in the desert? Why is it negeh for us? Especially we can barely identify most of those places. So there's an answer given based on this answer that the Ritva is bringing from Sefer Yudayim that the Isser is only to go if you go on that exact route. Well, then everybody else is not going on that exact route. The Ritva says another possibility is the Issur only applies when the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, that were anyway scattered in Golos, then there's no difference between Egypt and anywhere else. Now, the Rambam evidently himself does not hold of those various Hakadim. The Rambam just brings the halacha that in Hilchos Melachim, that even nowadays you're allowed to live anywhere in the world except for Egypt, except that you're allowed to go there for trade or to conquer it. And then he goes on to say that if a Melech Yisrael conquers the place, then you're allowed to live there thereafter. So how would the Rambam explain it? So there's a famous thing that says that they say that the Rambam, when he signed letters, he would sign them Moshe ben Maimon, who every day is over on three Averis, three times the Torah says not to live in Mitzrayim. On the other hand, they've never actually found an autographed letter in the Rambam's own handwriting that actually says that. So maybe he wrote that at the beginning, but we don't have. Anyway, there's a number of anyway, besides the answers that Itva is giving over here, there are other answers, one of them being that these people came there, including the Rambam, at a time when Poshet it was dangerous for Jews to live any place else. So therefore, it was a matter of pikuach nefesh, or a variation on that. They didn't come there originally intending to settle there for the rest of their lives. They came there as a temporary refuge, and once they're there, then they're not required al pi halacha to leave. Anyway, so now again, Nicanor went to Alexandria to get these doors. Bachazarose, and when he was on the way back, now they're not bringing the doors overland; they're bringing them in a ship from the port of Egypt, from Alexandria's port to the port in Eretz Yisrael, to the port, as the Gemara is going to say, the port of Akko. Why actually, if you think about it, the port of Yafo is closer to Yerushalayim. Why does the Gemara tell us over here? Why does the story tell us over here they disembarked at the port of Akko? I don't know. In any case, the point is that we're going to take it on ship and then disembark it over there and bring it overland from there to Yerushalayim.
Did you start a Lamed base?
Yes.
I'm not really functioning. Still don't have the place. About how far made down one down about
Now we're about seven lines down. Not that much, actually. No, we're only about three lines down. When he was on his way back, a storm arose in the sea and was threatening to drown Which here's the way the Ritva points out. Don't think that the storm was a punishment for going to Alexandria. Again, we just discussed why there was no Issa in that. The storm was meant to, actually not the Ritva says this. There are other Mepharshim that point that out. It wasn't as a punishment for that. It was just because actually Tosfos Yeshanim points it out. It was rather it gives an opportunity for him to go on Mesiras Nefesh for these doors as the continuation of the story. Anyway, v'notlo achas mehenvi tilu layam. So the sailors took one of the doors and threw it overboard in an attempt to lighten the ship. But still, the storm didn't calm down. So they were about to throw the second one overboard. So he grabbed a hold of it and was hugging it with his arms. He tells them, if you're going to throw it overboard, throw me together with it. Right away, the storm calmed down. But he was feeling very bad about the other door. Now, what was he thinking in the first place that he allowed them to throw the one door overboard? So there's a couple of possibilities. Ion Yaakov points out that as long as he has one door left, at least, you know, they have one, they can make another one of the same pattern in Yerushalayim. So therefore, he wasn't so worried at first that the first one was gone. But once the second one, then already, he realized, you know, the shluch mitzvah in Nizokin, he has a responsibility to see to it that at least one door gets to Yerushalayim, and therefore he was moisa nefesh on it. Ben Yehoyada points out another point the other way around also. Nicanor may have taken the view, look, if he tells them the first time, throw me overboard, and they do, who's going to watch the second door? How's the second door going to ever get there safely? Well, once they threw over the first one, then he realizes if they throw over the second one, he's got nothing left to live for, so then he might as well have them throw him overboard as well. And he adds, this is why he felt bad now, because now he realizes, you know what, if he had taken a stand for the first door, maybe he could have saved it as well.
We're just trying to lighten the door from the storm.
Yeah.
That's why
it's yeah. Over the door. That's why they're throwing them over. Yeah, they're heavy copper doors. Yeah. Anyway. When they reached the port of Akkoi, the door that they had thrown overboard was peeking out from under the sides of the ship. So in other words, the Eibishter had made a nest and it snagged onto the ship, or it floated along with the ship and came along with. Some say that rather what it was is a sea creature, like a large whale or something like that, swallowed the door and then spit it up onto dry land. Either way, it made it there safely. This is the kind of thing that Shlomo means when he describes in Shirat Shirim, metaphorically, he describes the house of the couple who are described there in Shir HaShirim, which is a metaphor for the Jewish people and Hashem, and he's referring to the Beis Hamikdash. Kodesh Batenu Arozim, the beams of our houses are made out of cedar. Rohitenu Beroisim, or Rohitenu are made out of Beroisim. Now the simple meaning, Mepharshim on the Pasuk say, Rashi mentions over there, he's not quite sure what Rohitenu is, but he says maybe it means the bolts. The bolts of the doors that you use to bolt the doors shut.
What's the Hebrew word for furniture?
In modern Hebrew, rahitim means furniture. That may be based on this pasuk, but in the context of the pasuk, I think there are some of the Mepharshim who understand it that way, which is probably where they got it from in modern Hebrew. But Rashi himself says it may mean the bolt, because like the bolt sort of runs back and forth as you open and close the door of it. Anyway, here the Gemara is doubting that rahitenu refers to the doors themselves. As far as the word broisim, it means obviously some kind of wood. Some of the Mepharshim say it may be identical with broshim, which means cypress or juniper or some other kind of expensive wood like that. But here the Gemara is dashing, I'll take you broshim, ela brisim or bris yam. There are several different girsois over here. The girsa brisim would mean as if the doors had made a bris one with the other, that they're not going to be separated. So therefore, wherever one goes, the other one is going to come along with it. The girsa bris yam would mean like a, and would mean either that the sea made a bris with it to save it, or brias yam, that it means that a sea creature, brias yam, mean a creature of the sea, swallowed it, which is according to the second version. Rashi brings another girsa, krusim, that we read the word not as if it was broisim, but krusim, meloshin krisas bris, meloshin making a covenant with one with the other. In any case, you have some different girsois, but the point is that the Gemara is darshaning from this pasuk is a hint about what happened with these doors. Now, therefore, eventually all the gates in the Beis Hamikdash were all exchanged for golden ones. When they first built the second Beis Hamikdash, and the Jewish people were relatively poor. So they didn't have a lot of resources. Now we know the halacha is, if you have the resources, you make everything as much as possible in the Beis Hamikdash out of gold. When they built the second Beis Hamikdash, they didn't have that. So now, in later times, as they became richer, they instead made that everything in the Beis Hamikdash that could be made out of gold was chutz mishari nikano, with the exception of these gates of nikano, because nisim had happened with them, so therefore they wanted them to stay there as a permanent memorial of the Ness. The Yesh Omim, Mepneshin Choshtin, Mutzhevas Hoysa. Another version is Yesh Omim. The reason why they didn't replace them with gold ones is because, anyway, the copper, the bronze of them gleamed and shone like gold. Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer. In fact, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov says, Nechoshes Klonissa Hoysa. It was burnished brass or bronze. Rashi explains Klonissa means like shiny. You have a word, in fact, in Tanakh, you have an expression, Nechoshes Kolol, which has the same meaning, which means burnished, polished bronze. So here, maybe what Rashi is saying over here is the word Klonissa is a later development from that word Kolol. Whatever the case, so that it was made out of bright copper, so it shone like gold, and therefore that was another reason why they didn't have to replace it with gold doors. There was an interesting explanation from Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, who talks about the deeper idea behind the story. One of the deeper ideas behind the story is Nikanor himself represents Yaakov and Yosef. He explains how the name Nikanor itself, Nun Kuf Nun Vav Resh, he explains how the outer letters of it, Nun and Resh, Ner represent Yaakov, and the inner ones, Kuf Nun Vav, represent the gematria of the name Yosef. And then he goes on to explain in how the two doors and what happened with one of them were. So the two doors, one of them was in the sea and then was spit out from there, and the other one remained out of the sea the whole time. Those represent respectively Yaakov and Yosef, and the expression over here that was saying that the copper of them was matziv. That you break down the word matziv, he says mem tzadik equals 130, which is the period of Yaakov's life that he lived in difficulties, and the rest, the hey yud beis, represents 17 good years that he had in Mitzrayim. So that the whole thing over here represents the relationship of Yaakov and Yosef. Okay. So now the Mishnah had mentioned, on the other hand, we said there were several people who we mentioned in a derogatory way because they knew secrets that were used for serving Hashem, and they didn't teach them to other people. The first one we said was Beis Garmu, who they were in charge of making the Lechem Aponim. So what was the story? Tanan Abanan, Beis Garmu Hoy Bekin Memaisa Lechem Aponim. They were the experts in how to make the Lechem Aponim. But they didn't want to teach anybody else how to do it. They wanted to keep their monopoly. Well, the Chachamim didn't like that. Shochu Chachamim Vehevu Umanin Alexandria Shemitzayim. So the Chachamim sent and brought experts from Alexandria. Again, you wanted in those days, you wanted any science or technology or whatever, you went to Alexandria. So therefore, they sent for experts from there who would know how. You have to remember the Lechem Aponim has a very complicated shape. It's Lechem Aponim Sheyesh Leponim Harbe. It has a lot of surfaces. There's different opinions among the Mefarshim exactly how it was shaped. But basically, you even have, first of all, the Gemara itself has a machlokas whether the basic shape was like an open box or whether it was like a V shape, like a ship, like the keel of a ship. But then on top of that, you have different Mefarshim have different opinions of exactly how the walls and the corners and whatever it was shaped. But whatever, it was a very complex shape.
They paid for that, or just
the
mitzvah to do it?
They were paid. That's what we're going to get to. So now the Chachamim fired Beis Garmu, and they sent for these experts from Alexandria, where they were going to bake the Lechem Aponim instead. But Yoydin left us Kamoisan. Now they knew how to bake the Lechem Aponim, the same as Beis Garmu. Loyho Yoydin Ludus Kamoisan, but they didn't know how to take it off the oven the way that Beis Garmu did. Lirdos literally means to kind of like to peel off, because that's how they did in those times. When you bake bread, you find all over Shas, you would usually stick it to the wall of the oven, and then afterwards you would have to use like a spatula or something to scrape it off the side without letting it fall into the fire, without it breaking apart, whatever. It was a skill. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that Radias Apas, that taking bread out of the oven like that is Chochma Ve'ena Malacha. It's a skill. It's not a malacha. Technically it would be Mutter on Shabbos, but it's also Dirabon.
Loaves of bread were very heavy.
So they were heavy also. So the experts from Alexandria, they were heating up the oven from the outside. Now, the point is, Rashi learns they were afraid to stick it to the inside of the oven because it's such a delicate, complex shape. They were afraid it was going to break. So therefore, so therefore, they would heat up the oven on the outside and they would stick the bread to the wall of the oven also from the outside. As opposed to base gamu, they knew how to fire up the oven on the inside the normal way and to put the bread on the inside and be able to take it out without it breaking. So the point is, base gamu's bread was much better baked because it was baked because the inside of the oven is a lot hotter than the outside. There's different other girsois and different other explanations. The Meiri brings a different girsa over here. That they were heating up the oven on the inside and baking it on the outside. Whatever the case, the point is they weren't baking it as thoroughly as base gamu because they were afraid to, because they didn't know how to put it on the, to put it. The Gemara in Menachos also mentions that they had molds. They had several. They had a mold in which they originally shaped the dough. Then they had another mold they would put it inside when they're baking it in the oven, which had to be a little bit larger because after all, it expands during baking. These experts from Alexandria, they didn't know how to handle the dough with these various molds. So the result was halolo pitan misapeshes v'halolo en pitan misapeshes. The result is the lachem aponim that the Alexandrian experts made ended up becoming moldy because it wasn't thoroughly baked in the first place. Whereas the one from base gamu would not get moldy. Now we've learned before that the lachem aponim would stay hot all week. Still, first of all, ein soimchen al hanes, whatever you have to do, whatever you can do, b'derech hateva, you have to do, Ritva and Marsha point out. Second of all, the Ritva points out that it could be, this was talking about at a time when ein osin ritzon shamakim, when the Jewish people are not really following what Hashem wants, and therefore these nisim don't necessarily happen, and therefore the lachem aponim would spoil. Anyway, when the Chachamim heard what's going on, Amru, they said, you know what? After all, everything that Hashem created in the world, He created to bring more covered for Himself. As the pasuk says, everything that's called by my name, and for my honor, I created it. So everything in the world is meant to give glory to Hashem. That means, therefore, the fact that Beis Gamu has this talent where they know how to make the lachem upon him and nobody else does, Hashem created that talent of theirs for a purpose, and it's more bekavedik for Hashem that his bread, that the lachem upon him, should not get moldy. Therefore, we have no choice but to call them back. So Beis Gamu is going to return to their place. They're going to rehire them. But the Chachamim sent for them, and they didn't want to come. They didn't just they were holding out for higher wages. So the Chachamim told them, "We'll double your wages," and then they were willing to come back. So what was it? So up until then, they would be paid 12 mana, and now they were paid double as much, 24. Rabbi Huda says they used to be paid 24, now 48. To give you an idea, again, you know, we learned before that a poor person could live off 2 mana a year. So even according to the mayor, they're making 6 times as much as that. And according to the Yehuda, 12 times as much as that before. And now double as much. The word b'chol yoyim, by the way, makes it sound as though every single day they're being paid 12 mana. But I think the Rashash points out, I mean, that's impossible. You know, that would be an enormous amount per year. It means b'chol yoyim, every day, meaning up until that point, they were being paid X amount, and now they're being paid double. Anyway, Amru lahem chachamim mara isim shlo lelamed. So the chachamim asked them, what made you decide not to teach them? Is it only because like this, you have a chance now to get a much higher salary for it? So like you figured you have a monopoly on it and therefore you can charge whatever you want. Omru lahem, but Beis Gamu answered no. Our ancestors knew that the bit who first taught us this method of making the lechem upon him, that the Beis Mikdash is eventually going to be destroyed. V'shama yomud adam sheina hogun, an improper person, a not erlich person, might learn this method of ours. V'yelech v'yabud akum b'kach, and he's going to go worship up at his honor with it. So they were saying that's not, we weren't keeping the secret as just for our own covered. We were keeping the secret for covered shamayim. Now, did the Chachamim necessarily accept that? Did the Chachamim necessarily accept that that argument? Not necessarily, because the fact is, on the one hand, it's a fair point. You don't want them to use it for Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, what happens eventually? The secret might die with them. So they're not necessarily accepting it. However, for the following thing, the Chachamim did mention them favorably, meaning the Chachamim may not have accepted that reason of theirs. The Chachamim are still thinking there is still a certain element of self-interest involved, that like this, they figure they have a monopoly on it and they can charge whatever they want, as we see that they were holding out for double the wages. But the Chachamim did praise them for the following thing. They never found, even in their children's hands, clean white bread. So people shouldn't think that they're benefiting from the lechem aponim, like they're taking the extra of the flour for themselves. With that, they're fulfilling what the Pasuk said, that you should be clean before Hashem and before the Jewish people, meaning that a person has a responsibility to act in a way that not only Hashem knows that he's being honest, but that people also, that he's above suspicion for people as well. So they're acting in that way as far as this.
Yeah.
Okay. Tonan Abanan, then we learn in a Braisa. What about the second group that it mentioned in the Mishnah? Beis Avtinas, Hoyubakin, Mimaisa Akturis. The family of Avtinas were experts in how to make the Akturis. And again, they didn't want to teach others how to do it. So again, the Chachamim went and called for experts from Alexandria. Now they knew how to blend, how to grind and blend the spices for the Ketores, the same as Beis Avtinas. The one thing they didn't know, they did not know how to make the smoke go up in a straight column the way that Beis Avtinas did. Now, many of them, now there is, we say every day in Ketores, we say Mala Oshen Kol Shehu. You have to put in a small amount. The Mala Oshen is some type of herb or something like that that makes the smoke rise up straight in a column. So now, most of the Mefarshim understand. So Rashi uses the expression over here that these experts from Alexandria didn't know of a particular kind of herb that would do that, that would make it go upright. Many of the Mefarshim learn. Tosfos Hashanim mentions, it's Anaf Yosef over here explains that Rashi would agree with this as well. It's not that these experts from Alexandria didn't know Mala Oshan at all. Because after all, if you don't put Mala Oshan on the Ketores, it's possible. So the Chum are certainly not going to tolerate them making Pasuk Ketores. Rather, what it means is they knew of some kind of thing that will make the smoke go mostly up, but some of it will disperse to the sides, as opposed to Beis Avtinas knew specially one particular kind that will make it exclusively go straight up. On the other hand, the Beis Yosef actually in the Beis Yosef on tour explains he learns differently. He says that actually only for the Ketores of Yom Kippur is Mala Oshen required. For the Ketores the rest of the year, you are supposed to have it, but if you don't have it, then B'dieved the Ketores is kosher, and he proves it from this Gemara, because apparently these experts from Alexandria, he learns that they didn't know of any Mala Oshen at all. So the smoke is just going every which way, and apparently the Ketores was still kosher. Only Yom Kippur would it have been a problem. Many Achronim then asked on the Beis Yosef, on the basis of a Gemara later on in Orma Sechta, which seems to say pretty clearly that during the rest of the year also, the Ketores does have to have Mala Oshan, and they discuss in various ways how the Beis Yosef would fan for that. In any case, again, many of them are Foshim over here learn that the question is not a question to begin with, because not that they didn't have Mala Oshan at all, it's just that their Mala Oshan wasn't the kind that makes it go exclusively straight up. Well, So the Ketores made by Beis Avtinas, the smoke would go straight up like a stick. Matama means it would be like a tomer, like a palm tree going straight up like a stick. Whereas the one made by the experts from Alexandria, the smoke was going this way and that. So either like many of them, either like the Beis Yosef learns means there was no Mala Oshan in there at all, or according to many of the other Mefarshim, there was Mala Oshan, but it wasn't the kind that makes it exclusively go up. Some of it was dispersing to the sides. When the Chachamim heard about this, Amru, they said, like they said before, everything Hashem created in the world, He created for His glory. Shenemar, and here they quoted a different passage. Everything that Hashem has done, He did for His sake. So therefore, in other words, so why are they quoting a different pasuk? Maushaw explained, the difference is with Beis Gamu, it was a talent of their own. It was a knowledge, it was a special talent that they had, how to be able to put the lechem aponim in the oven, in these molds, and be able to take it out without it breaking. So that kind of thing, we say on it, Hashem created them with that talent in the first place for his glory. On the other hand, here we're not talking about talent that Beis Aptinus had. It was just a particular piece of knowledge that they had, which nobody else knew of a particular herb called Mala Oshan. So you can't say on that that Hashem created them with this knowledge. Rather, you can say on it, Kol Paul Hashem Lamatnehu, that herb itself was created for this purpose of for being used for the Mala Oshan, and therefore it's only appropriate that those who know that secret should be the ones who are making the Ketoros in the Beis HaMikdash. That's how Maharshal learns. Tosfos Yeshonim says it somewhat differently. He says the vote is that by the lachem aponim, it's actually becoming moldy. Your parsha can't eat it, so therefore the mitzvah of lachem aponim is not being fully fulfilled. Here, at least you have. The smoke is basically going straight up. It's just not going completely straight up. Some of it is dispersing to the sides. So you can't say on it that it's a lack of covered for Hashem, but you can say, Kol Paul Hashem Lamaneu, that everything is done for the sake of Hashem, meaning that this should have, it should be the proper way where it exclusively goes straight up and doesn't disperse at all.
When and where was it going and molded? Why?
We said the lachem aponim knew, we said before, the experts from Alexandria, they didn't know how to bake it properly. Said before.
Yes.
So again, Beis Aptinus is going to go back to their job. The chum sent for them, and they didn't want to come back. They offered them double their wages, and then they came back. Reb Meir says they used to be paid 12 mana, and now from now on they're being paid 24. Reb Yehuda says they used to be paid 24, and now they're being paid 48. Again, the Chachamim asked them after it was all over, why didn't you not want to teach it? Is it just because you're looking out for yourselves? And they use the same answer as Beis Gamu. Our ancestors knew that the Beis Mikdash was going to be destroyed. An improper person might learn it. And he'll go worship Avodah Zarah with it. So again, the Chachamim are not necessarily accepting that rationale. Because, fine, the fact is you still shouldn't allow the secret to die with you. But, however, the Chachamim would mention them for a praiseworthy thing as far as another thing that they did. No kala, or any woman, but even a kala who usually wears a lot more perfume would never go out of their house wearing perfume. In other words, because again, they didn't want anybody to think that they're using the Ketoros improperly. But by the way, Ben Yehoyada points out later on, we're going to learn a few days from now, Be'ez Hashem, that in Yerushalayim, the smell of the Ketoros was so strong that nobody needed perfume in the city. So in that case, what's the Chiddush? So he says, the point is, even when they're living out of town or staying out of town, where then they would normally want to use perfume, because after all, the smell of the Ketoros is not found over there. Nevertheless, they wouldn't. And in fact, Beis Aptinus, when they would marry a woman from someplace else, they would make a condition with her, I'm marrying you only on condition that you're never going to wear perfume. Because otherwise people might think that they're using things from the Torah to perfume themselves. Again, that fulfills what the Pasuk says, be clean before Hashem and before the Jewish people. Before, by Beis Gamu, with the white bread, we didn't mention that they made any condition with their wives. Ben Yehoyada points out, because if the husband is eating whole wheat or pumpernickel bread, the wife is not going to go and then try to get better bread for herself. She'll just eat whatever her husband has. But with perfume, only women wear perfume generally. So the women from other families wouldn't even know that this is a special custom of Beis Aptinus, and therefore they would actually have to make the stipulation with them.
They got paid double. Is that connected to Lech Mishan? Double.
No, it's just they've been paid double, because otherwise they wouldn't come back.
Lech Mishan's too, so they
double the pay. I know. Okay. Tanya, Omer Rabbi Shmuel. So now Rabbi Shmuel says, one time I met up with a descendant, this is after the Churban already, I met up with a descendant of one of them, with one of the members of Beis Aptinus. And I said to him, look what happened. Your ancestors that wanted to increase their covered because, like we said, they would only they wanted to keep their monopoly and to demand a higher wages for it. And they were ready with that to reduce Hashem's covered. Meaning, in other words, Marsha says that this way, if they're getting paid more, they're getting paid such a large amount. Now that means there's less money in the lishka for the other needs of the Beis Mikdash. Now, after the Churban, Hashem's covered is still what it is because Malay Kalar is covered. And instead, Hashem made their covered less because now Beis Aptinus is out of a job. So in other words, he's telling them, you know, your ancestors had the wrong idea of what to do, and it turns out Hashem has his way of taking care of the matter.
So nothing's really changed. Whatever was then, it's the same thing now. Hakol Kesef.
Yeah. Amr Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says, Sochli Rabbi Shimon ben Golo, Rabbi Shmuel ben Loga, Ha-machas yotzosi ani ve'echad mibnei l'sodeh l'lakad asavim. So this Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Shmuel says that one time I went out to the field together with a descendant of Beis Aptinus to pick herbs, to pick vegetables. Re'isiv shebocha v'sochak, and I saw that my companion was crying and then laughing. So I asked him, why are you crying? He said, because I'm remembering the glory of my ancestors, that they used to be the ones to make the Torah and the Beis Mikdash. So he asks him, so why then afterwards were you happy? He says, because I have betochen that the Eibishter will restore our glory to us. The third Beis Mikdash will be built, and we'll go and we'll have our job back making the Torah. And he says, Mara Isa. So sort of Shimon or Rabbi Shmuel asks him, what did you see that all of a sudden evoked all of this thought by you? Amali, Mala Oshan Kenegi. So he says, because someplace in front of me here is the Mala Oshan plant, and I recognize it. So Rabbi Shmuel says, Hareuli, show me it, identify it for me. Amalei, so the kid says, no, Shvua hi biyadeinu shein marin oisa l'chaladim. We have a Shvua in our hands, meaning our ancestors have besworn us to secrecy that we shouldn't tell it to just anybody because, like we said before, they were saying we don't want that information to fall into hands of goyim who will use it to worship Avodah Zarah. And on top of that, Amar Rav Yechon ben Nuri, Pamachas Matzosi Zoken Echad, one time I met with an old yid, Umegilas Samonin Biyadei, he had in his hand a scroll listing the ingredients of the Torah. So not only listing the ingredients, we all have that in Pitur Maktoris, but also it gave details about them. The Rashash suggests, for example, that it had pictures of them. So we're clear things to identify. Amartile Ma'ainata, I asked him, where are you from? Omalim Beis Aptinus, and he says, I'm descended from Beis Aptinus. Umabiyotcha, what are you holding? Omalim Megillas Samonin. So Rabbi Yechanan says, Hareyoli, show it to me. Omali. So the old man says to me, Kolzman Shabes Abba Hoyutsnuin or Kayomin, as long as my father's family, as long as my family, Beis Aptinus, Snuin would mean that they're tsniastic, they don't blab secrets. Kayomin would mean that they existed. They wouldn't just give it over to anybody. So in previous times, I would have said no, and I would have given it to you. But now this old man says, now that my father's family doesn't deserve to have this kind of knowledge anymore, they're not snuyin, or the Girsa Kayomin, they don't even exist anymore, they've all been wiped out. Then here, take this scroll, but be careful that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands. So Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri says, when I went and told this over to Rabbi Akiva, now, from now on, we're not allowed to say anything derogatory about them, because now, from your story, that bears out that what they were saying all those decades earlier, that we don't want to tell the secret because it'll fall into the hands of the Goyim, it was true after all. Here the Chachamim didn't believe them, and they were saying they're doing it just for their own glory. But now, based on what this old man told you, we see that all along that was the reason they were doing it. Now, the fact is, we do have it in the Mishnah, for one thing, because Mishnah Lozazim and Mekoyma, one many Mishnayos existed before Rebbe and even before Rav Akiva, and they still continue to teach them. So, therefore, the Mishnah still mentions Beis Aptinus and criticizes them. But now, Rav Akiva is saying the fact is, we should realize that they did have the right intentions all along. So the Gemara continues, Mikan Omer ben Azai, based on this story, based on this whole thing that we have over here, that the base Garmu and base Aptinus were fired, and the Chachamim were forced to rehire them, and even at a higher salary, because nobody else could do exactly what they were doing. So Ben Azai says, you can learn a lesson from this of how Hashem runs the world. B'shimcha yikru'ucha, they will call you by your name. In other words, nobody should ever worry that somebody else is gonna take over my parnasa. They'll call you by your name, meaning Hashem will, they'll call you, Hashem will arrange things that they'll have to call for you by name, and you'll have your parnasa, and you'll have your job. They'll have you sit in your place, meaning you're not going to lose your position just because somebody else is honing in on it. You will be given from what comes to you. In other words, you shouldn't think that you have to go and take advantage of the other guy in order to get more of what needs to come to you. No, you should realize that everything comes to you, and Hashem can do it without impinging on the other guy. Nobody can touch, nobody can interfere with what's prepared min hashamayim for the other person, as we see in the story where the experts from Alexandria couldn't take over for base Gamu and base Aptinus. One kingship does not overlap the next one by even a hair's breadth, meaning the moment that Hashem decides that a certain kingdom or a certain nation should fall is when it happens. Rashi brings an example. Some nations Hashem decide that they should be destroyed by night. For example, we find by night Belshazzar was killed and the empire above El fell. Sometimes, on the other hand, you have a nation that Hashem decides that their fall should be by day, and based on Yapsukim and Yechezkel that refer to Mitzrayim and Nebuchadnezzar's times being conquered and destroyed by day. So Hashem always decides to the exact moment when that should be, and no one can overlap the other one by even a hair's breadth.
How about David and Shlomo?
So that was exactly that. When David was asking, let me live another day, then and Hashem tells him no, because it's Shlomo's time to rule, and exactly that. Yeah. So Marsha explains, in other words, that what is this repeated expression? B'shimcha yikru'ucha means, like this, the Gemara is going to explain soon, that we have the Mishnah already, b'shem Rishoyim Yirkav, that the names of Rishoyim should rot because we don't want to mention them in a positive way. But now that we see what happened with Beis Gamu and to even to a greater extent, Beis Aptinus, that Beis Aptinus, now they have a good reason after all for what they were doing all these years, keeping their secret, so they will be called by your name, meaning, in other words, don't think that their name has to fall into disuse because they're Rishoyim. They are, in fact, tzaddikim. That's the b'shimcha yikru'ucha. B'mkoimcha yeshivucha. As the boy said, in the future, Hashem will restore our glory to us and we'll go back and make the Torah. Mishocha yitnu l'cha. Like this, they got everything that came to them from the Tzurmas Alishka. Like this before, Rabbi Shmuel told them, you tried to take away from the covet of Hashem. Now, but now, Ben Azai is saying, no, it's not so. Everything that they got was to begin with a portion to them by Hashem. Hashem decides what they should get. Don't think that they're impinging on the Tzurmas Alishka. Those experts from Alexandria couldn't interfere with what's prepared for them. And similarly, that similarly one kingship does not take away from another one anything that Hashem doesn't decide. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with more about these characters in the Mishnah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Zion Kislev. The Pasuk says that Yosef Hashem Shenis Yodeh, Hashem will put out his hand again and gather all the dispersed of the Jewish people and then the dispersed of Yehuda from all four corners of the earth. And this will happen, take off from Yad Mamash, that Hashem will bring them all back and Hashem himself will come back with them, beginning with, the Rebbe was saying this in a Shabbos afternoon Sicha, so beginning right with the Suda of Matzoi Shabbos Kodesh, the Suda of David Malka Mashiach, which in fact will be held with David Malka Mashiach himself at the head of the table, because after all, on Shabbos Kodesh itself, Mashiach can come, and we will come to Eretz Yisrael in Manane Shmaya with the clouds, because after all, in Tchum and Lamayla Masora, as the Gemara tells us, there's no issue with traveling above 10 Tefachim, so we'll go to that. Seinu HaKadosh, to Yerushalayim HaKodesh, to the Har HaKodesh, to the Bis Mikdash, and to the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
It means
that any moment it can happen. Yeah. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos candle lighting. The minhag is that many women can light in the same room, and each one can make a bracha because the more light you add, the more simcha there is. However, you should be careful that two women shouldn't light in one candelabra. B'shas Emchak, you can be makel on that. One thing is, though, he doesn't mention over here that when you have girls and when you have girls and women lighting, for example, daughters and mothers, and they never made a point of this from beginning from when he started Mibsa Neshek, you have to be careful the girls light first, because after the mother lights, she's already motzi them, they wouldn't be able to make a bracha. So therefore, so you have to have, so they're lighting first, and then they're not motzi anybody else except themselves, and then the mother lights and she makes the bracha, and that's the proper order of things. I'm kind of